Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable, episode 87, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Jen and the triumphant return of Laura. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Computer finally working. Sorry.
So we're missing Karen and Kristen this week, but that's okay. They'll be back soon. I think we needed to also give Karen some time to cool off. And this is a rough episode for anyone to come back into. So we're going to be talking about season 5, episode 17, Her Handsome Hero, of course, referring to Belle and Gaston. And you can let us know what you think of Belle's storyline by tweeting us at Onceable, or you can comment on this post on hypeable.com. But before we get into the specifics, I just want to get a sense of how everybody's feeling after last week with a thumbs up, thumbs down for this week. So, Jen, how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling like I'm going to be a perpetual downer because I'm going to give it a thumbs down. I just couldn't. And I really couldn't. I tried really hard. But there were so many things that felt like plot holes that didn't really... Again, I didn't feel like this went anywhere. It did nothing to advance the story. We don't know what arc they're trying to tell us. Like, what are we supposed to be getting out of this except really ridiculous Belle and a more hatred for Rumpel? Because that's where I'm at right now. I've reached my limit.
Oh, boy. Laura, what have you been thinking of this season so far and this episode in particular?
I have really disliked the entire Hades storyline from the start. And I've missed a couple episodes due to computer issues, and I've not been feeling it. I thought we totally dismissed the whole Hercules situation. That could have been awesome. It just was like, there and gone. So we did the Hercules thing, and now we're done. Mm-hmm. And this one feels like I didn't like this either. I was like, oh, we're just going to play token Gaston, and it's just so weird. I don't know where this whole thing is going. It's like they're going to pluck around the underworld to find people's unfinished business and just take them out one by one. And then there's this whole weird, very weird love storyline between Hades and Selena that is just very bizarre. So, yeah, I don't like it at all. I'm going to go thumbs down.
I, unfortunately, am going to have to agree and give it another thumbs down. It's feeling a little too... episode of the week where there's no end game in sight. It's like we got Gaston one week, we got like we're not getting anywhere. And even in the like B story of this episode, which was our heroes trying to like get down into Hades' lair, like I feel like nothing was accomplished there either. And they were actively moving towards trying to get something done, and they just couldn't get it done, which I think was a great reflection of the show. It's like, we don't know what to do, so we're just going to go poke around all these different things that have been mentioned are important and see where we are. And it's sort of a reminder to us, too, that, like, nothing you're setting up is paying off. So, yeah, still a little frustrated. I'm hoping that the big reveal at the end of this episode takes us somewhere, but I think we have more questions about that reveal than we have confidence that the show can resolve it. But let's get into our favorite lines before we get moving on. And these were, let me tell you something, hard to find. So, and there's only three of us, and we were still like, oof. Let's see what we can pull out of this episode. So, Jen, what was your semi-favorite line?
So, my quote is from Belle, and it's to Rumpel. It's kind of an exchange between Belle and Rumpel. And Belle says, so you killed Gaston, my fiancé, and never thought to tell me? And Rumpel said, it was an arranged marriage. I was doing you a favor. And I feel like Rumpel's response is his entire, like, demeanor towards everything that Belle is. I was doing you a favor. I did it for you. You know, I'm a horrible person. I get it. But you love me anyway. Like, it's that whole, like, that kind of just sums up all of it. Like, their whole entire relationship, I feel, can be summed up by kind of how that exchange went.
Yeah,
I was. But that might just be me.
Of course, you would say that. But another thing that we could easily say, of course you would say that, comes in Laura's line. So,
oh my gosh, which my line is also from Belle. I have always known who you really are. That's why I love you. And what bugged, like, it, again, it's sort of like my favorite only because it's my favorite in showing how confused I am with this whole storyline. And I felt like this really, that quote really kind of summed it all up with Belle saying, I've known who you always really are. That's why I love you. And the next thing she turns around, grabs the dagger and is commanding him and is manipulating him. And I'm like, yay, healthy relationship based on, you know, lies, deceit, and manipulation, baby. That's the way to go. So, yeah, it was my favorite because it was my favorite in pointing out how warped I feel like this relationship is.
Yeah, I chose a line that sort of went along with that. Though in retrospect, I really should have chosen the hook squiggly line, but I just forgot about it. but mine was also from Belle, who says, "So every time you try something nefarious, it's a smashing success. But when I ask you to channel that power for good, you fail." And I feel like Rumple could just be like, "Yep, because that's exactly how I explained it to you before. Like, this is how it is." And I feel like we're getting into this like repetition of just, we're going to hear this same story over and over and over again. And right now it's not even like we're hearing it once this season, once another season. This is literally back to back episodes that we're hearing this exact exchange. Like, nothing has changed in the last 5 hours that have passed since you've had this initial discussion.
Yeah, it was like this weird almost battle for like the moral high ground, if you will, almost between Rumple and Belle. And especially with that quote too, Brittany, that you picked, I was like, okay, so people aren't perfect. They have different nuances. But like, there's a difference between diving into somebody's locker, you know, to like save their life versus like any number of things that Rumple has done, like did not have any sort of altruism or greater good at their intent. Anything that Rumple has done, it has always been for the betterment of Rumple. Belle is working towards a greater good or attempting to be more altruistic, and Rumple is never about that.
Mm-hmm. And he keeps telling her that. Like, he laid all his cards on the table last episode and was like, this is who I am. Like, you can't change me, but I don't really think you want to. Like, you have to choose to live with me like this, which she still is resistant to that, and she doesn't want to make the choice to be like, oh, well, here's the monster, I'm gonna live with that because that's apparently like all I can attract, which we kind of see a little bit in this episode. Even though the first relationship was an arranged marriage, the people are not that different, Gaston and Rumple.
Well, I feel like the show has spent such a lot of time talking about how people can be redeemed and nobody is like just one type of anything. And Regina is really, I think, the best proof of that, how she was, quote unquote, the evil queen, but it was more complex than that. And she's really changed, but has her moments. I mean, I feel like she's incredibly well fleshed out. But then we have these other weird digressions of, you're a villain, you're a hero, this is what villains do, this is what heroes do. And it's like, I feel like we've just, over the last season and a half, just lost the shades of gray. Like, we got very, all of a sudden, after, I think, probably when the whole, like, Cruella de Vil and company companion started, we just got locked into this, I'm a hero or I'm a villain thing, and this is the wheelhouse I fall into, and I'm never outside of it. And I don't feel like that's working very well. And I should give props to Hook too, because I feel like Hook is somebody who's, again, in gray areas, and he's really very well fleshed out too. But I feel like they're not giving that latitude to any other character right now, and I feel that's really kind of a huge mistake.
Yeah, and we have so many characters who fall into that area, and they did such a great job with Regina, and they were doing a great job with Hook, but Hook kind of like, his story fell to the wayside due to all these character of the week reveals that we've been having lately. But those two characters were the ones, even Emma a little bit, like, because she was dealing with being the Dark One last season, the first half of the season, sorry. So when they do focus their energy, like, those stories are what make the show great, but they're losing so much focus with, I feel like, trying to get names every week and be like, this week, tune in because Gaston's coming on. This week, tune in for Hercules and, like, Megara, but they didn't do it. They're not doing anything.
Yeah. Have you guys in the last 2 weeks made any kind of parallels with Lost and Once Upon a Time?
I've never seen Lost.
Only because part of the creative team, and it's not everybody, but part of the creative team on Once Upon a Time is the same creative team that brought us Lost. And I feel like there's almost a parallel to be made on how the early seasons of Lost were really compelling and tight, and there was this mystery and another mystery, and you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to figure this out? And there were all these amazing characters that you really were like, oh, you're only getting a little bit of a reveal, and then you learn some more, and then other people came in, and it was really fascinating. And then around like season four or so, it became this massive muddled mess. A lot of alliteration there. And they ended up after that season announcing, you know what, we only have 3 seasons left. We're going to wrap this all up. We're going to come to a conclusion on it, and it's going to be something. And I think a lot of fans kind of stuck around with Lost because they're like, oh, okay, good. This actually is having a point. They're going to wind this up. I'm going to stay tuned. And then we had the final finale of Lost, which if you go online and Google that, there's a lot of caps locks of rage about what a, again, muddled mess that was. But I'm feeling like this is like the second time out for this creative team pulling this. And it's like, guys, you got your get out of jail free card once. You cannot do this a second time.
Yeah, I'm having trouble, and Jen can attest to this because I've brought it up every week, seeing the importance of getting out of the underworld. Because right now it's sort of like they're on vacation and there's no like threat hanging over them. Like, it's not like if you stay past a certain number of weeks, like something like irreversible happens and you can never get back. Like, there's no looming threat. It's sort of like, take your time, we'll figure it out. If we have time to do some other things, we'll do them while we're here. Like, I just feel like the stakes aren't high enough, and I really don't, not that I don't care, but like, I don't feel any pressure to tune in and be like, well, did they get out this week? Because if they don't, X, Y, and Z happens. Like, yeah,
right,
there are 3 names on those tombstones, but it's not like affecting their day-to-day routine. No one seems to be too concerned, and I think that concern will carry me along more.
Yeah, there's no, like I said, there's no story. What story are they, and this has been my complaint every single week. I feel like we're not moving anywhere. We're just in this broken down version of Storybrooke with less of the extracurricular characters that we had. There is no point to what you're trying to show me or tell me, or there's nothing. I have no connection with what this story is supposed to be. And it's so frustrating because I think the first half of the season was pretty decent. I liked the Dark One story and I liked what they did with that. But this right now, I honestly have no idea where they're trying to go. I don't get it. I don't know what I'm, you know what I mean? Yeah, and that's what frustrates me, is that I've got nothing.
And it's not even, oh, go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say, also just a purely aesthetic situation on a visual level. I am getting so tired of the really orange Easter egg dye gloss over everything.
I've been saying that too.
I'm like, I just can't, I'm like, yeah. It's just getting old. I'm getting really tired of the orangey Easter egg dye over everything.
Yeah. And to Jen's point as well, I don't mind asking like questions. Like, I think questions are great. I like when Once Upon a Time introduces something. Like, in the first half of this season, we had the Camelot storyline trying to catch up to the Storybrooke storyline, and there were just tons of questions like, oh, but wait, how did this person get here? Or where is Merlin? Or did this person cross over? Those were good questions, and I didn't know what they were working towards, but at the same time, I liked having those questions every week. These questions that are coming out of here are more focused on, like, all right, how does magic work in the underworld? Or, like, who is down here? Like, the questions just aren't driving me to want to find out more. I'm more focused, actually, and we spent a little bit of time on this last week, on what's going on off screen. Like, is Camelot just taking over Storybrooke right now? Like, are they ever going to address that? Like, they left everything in shambles back in Storybrooke with all of the Camelot people there. But I feel like that is more interesting to me in this moment than what's actually happening. Like, I'm caring about the story that doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah, no, and that's, totally agreed.
Yeah.
But we did have some semblance of a story this week, and it was Gaston. So Gaston kind of, like, comes in, and he is, like, a keeper of beasts. Like, that's his gig down in the Underworld, because everybody has a job. And Hades has been recognizing that, like, hope is spreading in the Underworld because a flower bloomed, and that's not cool.
Those little daisies.
Yeah. And so we have him getting all hot and heavy about it, and so he kind of gets Gaston to be like, all right, I need you to, like, come and, like, fight Rumple and do all this. There's too much hope happening. We need to take care of this. And this is how we get a little bit more insight into Belle's backstory with Gaston, and, like, we heard in the quotes already that Rumple killed Gaston. So there's another connection, and it's just, there was this whole, the flashback. What did you guys think of the flashback with the mirror and the ogre?
I have to say, I'm curious to hear your opinion, because I'm a little different on it, but I'm curious what you think about that whole, you mean the bell, like when they're not in the Underworld section,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, the flashback where they, like, it's right after they figure out that...
Where the baby ogre's trapped, yep. And Gaston wants to kill him, and he's the actual monster.
Yeah.
Okay, I actually was kind of interested in that. I mean, I thought it was pretty predictable. I mean, after all, it is Gaston. You know he's not going to be altruistic. So, on that level, you know, you kind of knew he was going to double-cross. And I was pretty sure going into it, it was a double-cross with full knowledge of Belle's father. Like, I just felt like... Like, to me, it was just, I felt like it was kind of obvious that the two of them were in cahoots together. I felt like it was a giant setup. But I did kind of enjoy the story arc. I mean, I was waiting for Belle to figure out what was going on. And I thought the mirror thing was kind of cool. I liked the red eyes and stuff. I thought that was actually kind of neat. I also liked that Gaston, they weren't a slave to, oh, let's make him look exactly like that Disney character and get that really good looking swooshy 1950s pompadour thing going. I was, you know what I'm saying?
But he, like, did look great. Just,
yeah, but I just, because
he's
that's
a Ken doll.
but at least it was like, I mean, that actor actually naturally looks like that. Like, I was good not having, because I felt like very recently they've been like, oh, we've got to make them look exactly like the cartoonish thing. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So I really did like that the actor looked a little bit more like what he does in real life. I was good with that. I felt he was more, I felt like his story was more relatable because of that to me. But then after that, his storyline to me then fell apart as soon as we hit the Underworld. But I was kind of interested in the backstory. I did find that kind of interesting.
I think, you know, the monster thing was cool. And of course it shows Belle's softer side, and which I think we all know that she has just from the flashbacks we had seen in previous episodes and seasons with her and Rumple. And so I get it, but it feels a little redundant to me as well, because we've seen Belle in that place with her dad and we've kind of seen some of this already. So it kind of felt like we were rehashing a little bit. Mm-hmm. On things that we've already seen. And I feel like that's what this whole second half has been about in a lot of ways. It's kind of this rehash of different, you know, we'll take this storyline where we've seen Regina in a flashback and she's angry at Snow and we'll just make it a little bit different, but we're still going to go, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I feel like it's this constant, like, rehash. And I just want, like, I want there to be an actual plot point that moves us forward that's relevant. I didn't feel like this was something that made anything relevant, to be honest.
You're right. There was nothing new that we learned about Belle in that whatsoever. I mean, that was, I completely agree with you. That was completely repeated information. 100%. There was nothing really stunning we learned there.
Yeah. And I think it was meant in, when I was watching it, I was like, well, is this meant to be like, oh, see, Belle could do worse. I'm like, that's what I was like grappling for anything.
You can't sell
anything,
that to
you
me at this point, kids.
I know. So I was like, oh, are they trying to do that? Are they trying to just show that, like, Belle has a pretty, you know, like, she just has...
Belle has bad taste in boys.
Yeah.
That's what Belle has.
She has bad taste in people. Like, not that she has bad taste. She, chooses to focus on things that are good and thinks that she can change people and that people really do have this good inside of them, and she's constantly let down by that. But there's no room for her to grow from that. It's just, oh, she's right. Caught in this endless cycle of constantly being attracted to people's good qualities and ignoring the bad. Even when there's a mirror involved, and even when she's standing in front of Rumpel, who's like, no, I'm in this moment, even though you asked me, going to go against your wishes and use dark magic because it calls for it. Like, it's happening right blatantly in front of her and against her wishes, and she's stuck, and I feel bad for the character because I want her to be better, and she deserves better as a character. Because we've seen her, like, tough side, but...
Well, that's the thing, too, and it's almost in of itself this myopic wanting to constantly believe the best in people despite all evidence to the contrary. Like, I definitely am about giving people second chances or third chances or helping them pick up, but after a while, I'm going to probably bobble this analogy a little bit, but it's almost like the enabler of an addict of some sort, whether it's an alcoholic or a drug addict. Like, you can really believe in that person, and you can be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to so give you the second chance. And I'm not saying you don't want to be supportive of somebody, but after they have kicked you in the teeth so many times, like, sometimes the most supportive thing you can do is be like, I'm dumping you so you hit rock bottom, because right now you don't care enough, you know, and I can't be that person. You know, at a certain point, you yourself is more important than being the world's biggest doormat who's always going to believe in people. Like, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it does.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So I feel like we're just at this stagnant point with this couple and their two storylines, and I would be happy if we just took a break from them and just focused on maybe trying to tell a more compelling story with the rest of the heroes who are trying to do stuff. But we also have this other relationship that we're dealing with. So once Belle kind of inadvertently hits Gaston into the river, and that kind of loses her a deal with Hades, so now she's like, Hades was going to give her back custody of her unborn child, but, you know, he wanted Rumpel and Gaston to, like, for one of them to kill each other, and that didn't happen, so now, whatever, it's nonsense, the baby still belongs to Hades. So Hades realizes, though, that hope is kind of disappearing now because this deal fell through, and so he goes and, like, picks up a dead flower and, like, wraps it up real nice and slips it to Zelina like a prom invitation, like, hey girl, look what I can give you down here, death and destruction. So, I mean, that's his game, and he is sticking to it.
Right. And there's Selena, who's now, like, trying to have this moment with Regina where she's like, who could love me? I'm so unlovable. And I don't feel like we've really explored that storyline as best as we could prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that could be a really cool storyline to talk about how she does all the things she does because she feels unloved and unwanted, and to really go there and explore it. And suddenly we've led to believe that because she spent a hot 45 seconds with Hades, that they were the love of each other's life. I mean, to me, it was such a classic case of tell me instead of showing me. I mean, it was, and I'm not always one to, like, go scream in that, but I'm like, oh my God, I don't believe these two are really in love for a second. I don't really believe they have anything meaningful to each other. Like, it just...
Yeah.
I mean, I just felt like, oh my God, this is the world's most abusive relationship. Why are you dodging into this? You have a creepy stalker guy who thinks you're the love of his life after knowing you for 45 seconds. It's a warped love boat episode.
And he was only attracted to you in the first place because you send him a lot of souls.
Right. I'm like, this is just bad. I'm having a lot of problems with this whole storyline. That in Hades just creeps me out in a stalker. I don't know. I just, it's like the tone of, like, there's a certain tone that Once Upon a Time hits. Like, there are times it definitely gets dark and serious, but Hades just has this really creepy tone to him that I feel like I'm in a different series sometimes when he does his dark and evil thing. Like, to me, it's too dark and evil for the tone Once Upon a Time is trying to hit.
Yeah, I agree. And he, like, the character of Hades, like we saw when we watched Hercules, is like evil, but like funny and playful about it and knows when he's taken a step too far. And this Hades is darker, which is fine. But don't, you got to change the tone up with him then. Like, because like you were saying, Laura, it's just, it doesn't fit.
Right. Like, you feel like almost, and it's funny because I'm not the biggest fan of the Hercules movie, but the one thing I do think is kind of good about it is you almost feel like Hades is the host of his own late night talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you feel like he's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's, you know, Jimmy Fallon, or he's Stephen Colbert. Like, he is the host of his late night show gig, and he's got those one-liners rolling, and he's like, ah, you know. And I mean, it's almost like that in Saturday Night Live, and you don't get any kind of vibe like that off of the way Hades fits in this, and it doesn't kind of work in that universe at all.
Yeah, and we're not really seeing too much of his motivations. Like, yeah, he wants the souls down there, but does he really want those people like hanging around down there the whole time? Like, does he just want to get rid of them, like, and keep the status quo, but then you're gonna have to deal with everybody who's left in Storybrooke? Like, I just don't know what his vindictive attitude is geared towards. It could just be something as simple as he wants the souls, which would be fine, but I'd like to know that. Or at least just, like, even if he has just maybe 5 minutes on screen by himself where he's like, this is how I started out, this is when, like, because we would love to see Zeus, who cast him down there, and, you know, just, like, see what's going on there instead of just this random connection to have him have a parallel story with Zelina and Regina. You know, it, like, it felt cheap, and it could be better, so I'm a little over.
Well, I think it's the same thing. I'm not really sure where this is leading. Does this go to a, hey, we're going to redeem the underworld, and it's going to become a cute, fuzzy, fluffy place? You know, and that's where Zelina is going to get her happily ever after? Or are they going to get their happily ever after in this sort of warped relationship? Like, I'm not really clear what the end of this may be. It just, I don't know how this works.
Yeah, and Zelina's happily ever after, yes, it could include Hades, but her real happy ever after is with her kid, and that kid's not going to, she better not raise a kid in the underworld. That's just ridiculous. I mean, it might be better than Oz, who knows, but I'm not into it.
Right. And I think that's one place where we've seen Zelina make progress. Like, she's finally, I think, starting to see her child as not just a possession and like a trophy and a trinket.
And it's something she can hurt, like when she accidentally uses her magic.
Right. Like, I feel like that's starting to make a dent finally, which is good because I've never felt like that before. So I think that's positive, but I want to see them continue to go down that road. But I don't know how that works in the underworld.
So there was just one other plot line this week that led us to kind of a reveal at the end of the episode, which is that Emma had this dream that was, it was scary. Like, her mom died. We've all had those awful dreams. But this dream slowly starts to, like, happen. It's like bad deja vu, and they, all the events that keep happening with them trying to break into Hades' lair, that doesn't work. Then they go to the graveyard and they're trying to figure out a way to get their names off the tombstones. But all of these actions that they're choosing keep sort of setting up the circumstances of the dream where eventually Snow gets attacked and dies. But it turns out that the creature coming for Snow that's going to attack her is actually Red. And Red is in the underworld where we don't know if she's dead. She kind of can still tap into some of her magic because they were able to put the cape over her and she turned back, you know, into Red. That's how we knew it was her. But yeah, what did you guys think of that reveal and or the hero's mission? Because I felt that the hero's mission was a B story told like a C story. Like, it was like, oh, this is also happening. Yeah. Just glance over there for a minute. You'll see what they're up to.
It was like it was completely irrelevant, but you have to include them in the episode because they're technically the main plot line, even though they're not going anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, again, it goes back to there is no story arc, really. We don't know what we're supposed to be, you know, we don't know what any of the end game is. We can't even fathom what the end game is. So I think the reveal of Red is really interesting. And that she's going to be back, obviously, for an episode. And it looks like next episode we'll get some backstory on Mulan and Red together. But is Red dead? Is she like? I have so many questions about Red being in the underworld.
Yeah, I'm in the same place too. I was just like, she is not in the underworld. I was like, do not tell me she died with unfinished business, and this is the best you can come up with.
Right. I feel like I was very angry.
I do too, and I was like very rage angry with it because I just feel like Red has been one of the best characters ever, and they just screwed up with her. Like, she was such a strong, powerful, interesting, diverse character, and it's like, oh, we'll just chuck her over here. She's not doing anything this week. Bring her back. Yeah, and they have no idea what to do with her. So that's my two cents. And Mulan, too. I mean, I like Mulan. I don't like her as much as I like Red. But it's the same thing. It's like these characters that they kind of tossed aside just so that they could do like a, you know, oh, look, we did the Frozen arc. Oh, look, we got Merida in there coming around to Hades. I mean, I'm sitting here going, okay, wait, which movie is next now? You know, it's and they took away a character for the sake of product placement, or as my husband calls it, the infomercial.
I mean, I wish that, like, I hope that this story at least plays out well and it's an interesting connection, or if Red came down there because she was able to, like, travel from another world and has messages or some sort of help. I'm not really sure what's going on, but I hope that she's not dead. Because this would be the worst way for them to bring her back, to be like, okay, we're going to leave you down here. Or they're going to have another episode where they're trying to send someone on to a better place. Like, I don't want that. I want her to be alive and somehow got there. Because portals just magically work now. Like, that's another... Oh, you haven't been on, Laura. I've been really into just, please give up portal magic. Like, people should just be able to use them now. Like, no more random items. No more trouble trying to get portals. Like, everyone should just be able to portal hop now. I think that's pretty much this episode. I feel like we got out most of our frustrations and what's continuing to frustrate us, because nothing has changed yet. And I'm looking forward to a week where we're not rehashing storylines and we're getting something new and we're seeing what the big picture is, because right now there's just no big picture. Right. And I think that's what's frustrating us.
What do we have, about 5 episodes left now until the end of this season? We're somewhere in that ballpark?
Yeah, somewhere in that, I think about 5.
So what I really want is that by the end of this season, and I feel like every other season, at the end of the season, I have been very excited to, like, have had a very exciting conclusion to the season, and then a very exciting cliffhanger to the next one, which sometimes does or does not involve the smoke monster. But I feel like I don't have any I don't feel like I have that semblance now, and we're 5 episodes off, and I'm really, really hoping that the show that I really enjoyed coming to a very satisfying conclusion at the end of a season with some clue as to what was coming the season after. I don't see any kind of glimmer or setup on what that could be yet, and I'm really dying for that to materialize.
Yeah, and I just read the synopsis for next week because I was curious. And it says that they're searching for Dorothy, and that's how Ruby ends up in the underworld.
So does Zelina kill her somehow?
I don't know. It says that Ruby and Mulan go to Oz, because they can, you know, portal hop now. And they witness Zelina's return, so this is probably... They're probably in Oz as Zelina transports herself from Storybrooke at the end of last season. And then that's probably where that timeline's going to come in. And then Ruby, I guess Dorothy goes missing, like, at the same time that all this is happening. And that's how Ruby gets there. Also, Snow and David struggle with being separated from their son again.
Again? Sorry. Just reached my limit. I've reached my limit with rehash.
Hopefully Henry gets a storyline. That's really all I'm holding out hope for at this point. I want him to have some agency, because I feel like he's being reduced to just moody teenager number two, and that's not who he is. He's much more important, and he is always the one to have perspective. So,
yeah, and somebody who gets to be a teenager. Like, I just feel like they still continue to play him younger than he is, and he needs to be, you know, I don't need that very special episode where Regina hands him a condom and says, be safe, buddy. You know, I think I'd be like, ah!
Can you imagine?
You know, my eyes, ugh, my eyes. But I, you know, he is a teenager, and I just feel like he is still a little bit in that, oh, golly gee, shucks mode that they need to get him out of it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, hopefully we'll be back next week with some much more interesting topics to cover, including some more warrior Dorothy, though if she's missing, it's probably not a lot of Dorothy.
It's going
to
be real quirky.
But yeah, we'll be back next week to talk about Season 5, Episode 18, Ruby's Slippers. Welcome back, Laura. Glad to have you back on.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Glad to be back on. So lots of fun.
Until next week, I'm Brittany.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.